It's time. Once again, the most wonderful time of the day, Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. Right
food
here.
Mensch, I guess so.
All right, whatever.
Whatever is right.
Okay.
I have sort of one thing on my mind. Stay cool. Today is not going to be so bad, but bad enough. But I'm prepared. A few cool mornings, I made some food that's in the refrigerator, so I don't really have to cook today. But my big no-cook thing, reviving it from my youth when I was obsessed with this, bulgur. Do you eat bulgur? Spelled B-U-L-G-U-R or B-U-L-G-H-U-R. It's wheat. And I think most people at this point in the world, in American culture, know what tabbouleh is. And and bulgur is one of the two main ingredients to tabbouleh, which is a salad of herbs, mint and parsley usually. I just have mint. I just have parsley as of right now. And I put in scallions and tomato in mine. And I have changed my mind about proportions of parsley to bulgur. I didn't used to like a tabbouleh with a lot of bulgur, but nowadays I do. For one thing, for old people like me, bulgur is full of fiber. You should, if you're not fiber obsessed after you're 50 years old, you should be. My neighbor just asked me the other day, she said, "You're always talking about fiber. How much fiber do I have to eat?" Well, 25 to 30 grams a day is what you should be eating. But if you eat a lot of fruit and vegetables and whole grains, there's not any problem getting up to 25 a day, 30 a day. Although I have to say, fruit has less fiber than you want it to have. Like an apple maybe has 2 grams of fiber, not a lot, even though an apple a day will keep the doctor away. But bulgur is full of fiber, and tabbouleh is one of those things on a hot day, you can just pull it out of the refrigerator. It will last several days in the refrigerator, even if it's dressed already. Mine is dressed. I tasted it earlier. It's not quite 2 days old, and it's still perfect. So tabbouleh, a portion of, let me just say, let's start with, I'm sure your supermarket sells bulgur. However, I am having trouble, even in my advanced supermarkets, to find bulgur that is labeled fine, F-I-N-E, because it comes in various granulations. I guess I should tell you what bulgur is. It's whole kernels of wheat that are first cooked, either steamed or boiled. I think mostly these days they're steamed in some kind of high-tech machine. They're steamed, then dried, and then cracked. Now, if it's only a little bit cracked, it's coarse. You can even find, probably in a Middle Eastern market, whole bulgur. But cracked, for me, is great. Coarse is great. But I didn't really want fine. And everywhere I look, it looks fine. Usually there's a window on the package. So finally I broke down, and I bought a very well-distributed brand called Bob's Red Mill. You must have Bob's Red Mill in your supermarket.
Yes.
They make a red bulgur, and it's not marked any which way, coarse, medium, fine. It looked pretty fine. But in the end, it wasn't. It was perfect. It was like sort of the reason they're not marking it is it's very irregularly cracked wheat. It's not all fine. It's not all coarse. It's somewhere in between, or mixed, I should say. But it does plump up the way it should. What I did was I made too much the first time, I got to say, because the package itself in its recipe calls for a cup of bulgur. Well, a cup of bulgur turns out to be 3 cups of bulgur once you've soaked it, and then you're adding 3 cups of chopped parsley. parsley and other things, it's really too much for two people at home. So I made it again. This time I used a portion, a serving, is a quarter of a cup. And a quarter of a cup of tabbouleh, I mean, I should say bulgur, has 5 grams of fiber and a whole host of other things. I have seen it be called a superfood. It is, I have to say, one of the best carbohydrates you can eat. It's even better than pasta, and it is far, far, far better than rice. So as a side dish, it's sensational. But I was making tabbouleh. So I soaked in the case of tabbouleh, and if it's fine enough, bulgur, you don't have to cook it. You just soak it in hot water. I boiled up some water. I put I was making 2 servings, a half a cup of bulgur, and I poured over what amounted to 1.5 cups of boiling water, meaning I had my half a cup of bulgur in the measuring cup, and I poured in enough boiling water to make it 2 cups. And it had to sit, I have to say, it had to sit an hour before it was tender enough and had absorbed enough liquid. I didn't have to squeeze much liquid out. If you use more liquid, it's okay. I mean, you're going to lose some nutrition in the squeezing it out. But so I try to do it so it's more or less the right amount of hot water. Anyway, to that, to make my now famous tabbouleh, meaning my neighbors like it, I used 4 scallions. This is for a half a cup of bulgur. I used 4 scallions, sliced thin. I put those in the bowl first. And I did a little trick I learned, I hate to say it, 50 years ago probably, when I was at Newsday. I learned this from a Middle Eastern woman. When she made tabbouleh, she squeezed out some of the juices from the scallions by mashing them down, the sliced scallions, by mashing them down with the tumbler, with the bottom of a glass. I didn't use the bottom of a glass. I used a little mortar, but I did squeeze out some juices from those scallions. And then I put in the same bowl, my parsley. It was a whole big bunch of parsley. I didn't measure it, but I'm thinking it was at least 2 cups. Not chopped fine, fine, fine. Chopped, not even chopped. I slice across, and that's enough. You want to be able to taste the herb. Now, had I had some mint, which I did last time I made this because there was mint growing in the garden outside, but I used it. It wasn't very strong mint. If I was going to use mint, I would use a lot of mint. So you put in your parsley and mint, at least 2-3 cups. The scallions are there already. A medium tomato diced, and that's it. And then you add your tabbouleh, your bulgur, I should say, and toss it all together. You're going to need some salt, probably, and freshly ground pepper. And I dress it with my best olive oil and lemon juice. So I used two generous tablespoons of olive oil for that amount, and then about the juice of a large lemon. It was about 2 tablespoons of lemon. So even Stephen, oil and lemon juice. You can always doctor it up. You don't need a whole lot of oil, but you might want to add a little bit more salt and lemon juice. And that's it. Let it stand for a half an hour before eating it. You can eat it right away, but it is better after it sits for a little bit. And truthfully, it works very well in the refrigerator. So, even though it was a half a cup, which is supposedly 2 servings, and at least 2 generous cups of herb, we have enough for another portioning. In other words, that was enough for 4 people, if you have 4 people. So that's the one thing that I've been obsessed with this week. I am now going to make, because I, by the way, in my second book, which is called What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat, there are recipes for bulgur, because it is one of those pantry items that keeps for a very long time. I would say if you keep it in your pantry, you mean in a dark place, in a sealed jar or tin, your bulgur should last 2 years. In fact, I would say that in bulgur was invented as a storage method. I mean, you had a wheat harvest, and you had excess wheat, not wheat you were going to use right away. What did you do with it? You made flour, and you made bulgur, because bulgur stays a whole lot longer than freshly harvested wheat. So it's a dry product. And so in my book, I mention that you can make a bulgur and tuna salad, and truthfully, what I'm going to take my leftover tabbouleh and turn it into a tuna salad by adding, of course, some tuna fish and maybe some chopped celery, very finely diced celery, maybe some very finely diced. Well, I don't need shallots because I have scallion in there, but it couldn't hurt. And I do have some dill. So I'm going to just toss up my tabbouleh with tuna and some other additions, and it's going to be a new salad. The other thing that I'm dying to make, it, now that I'm into this bulgur thing, is Diane Kochelis, who is the only Greek food writer you need to read. And by the way, Diane is online. She has a newsletter. She's doing a lot of stuff on the internet. But she's written several books. And this is a recipe I've made several times because I like it so much. I see it's in my own computer handwriting, so to speak, in my computer. And it's beef and bulgur meatballs on a bed of onions. Doesn't that sound good? So you take your pound of ground beef and you mix it with a finely chopped onion. I would say a good medium onion, medium-large onion. A cup of fine bulgur. Now, that's the problem. I have to find fine bulgur. If I'm making this dish with the bulgur that I got from Bob's Mill, I'm going to run the bulgur through the food processor for a couple of spins to make it a little finer. Because in this case, you want the bulgur to absorb juices of the meat, etc. And if it's too coarse, it's not going to happen. A couple of cloves of garlic, finely chopped. You're putting this all in with the meat. A pound of meat, a half a pound onion, so to speak, very finely chopped. A cup of fine bulgur. A couple of cloves of garlic, finely chopped. At least a teaspoon of salt. A half a teaspoon of pepper. And that's it. Cover after you have this all mixed with your hand, and so that it's a nice, dense mass, cover it with plastic wrap and put it in the refrigerator for at least an hour. You can make it in the morning for the afternoon or evening, too. It doesn't have to be just an hour. But anyway, you're going to form this meat when it's been rested for a while. And by the way, it gives a chance for the bulgur to start absorbing some liquid. Make golf-size meatballs. Golf ball-sized meatballs. You probably get a couple of dozen. And in a big skillet, heat some olive oil, just enough to cover the bottom, and sauté your sliced onions, which is going to be, I don't know, three medium onions peeled and sliced. And then add some tomato. Now, I happen to have three canned tomatoes and their juices in the refrigerator, left over from something else, and that's the exact amount of tomatoes that I need. So after sautéing your onions, a pound and a half, three medium onions, medium-large onions even, you're going to add your three, four canned tomatoes when they're wilted, crushing them into the pan, and stir well, and bring it to a simmer, and then place the meatballs on this bed of tomatoey onions. Add enough water to come about two-thirds up the side of the pan, and bring it back to a simmer. Cover, I don't often cover pans, but in this case, cover the pan and adjust the heat so that it just simmers very, very gently. I would say it's going to take at least 40 minutes. And then you can serve them. You know, I uncover the pan at the end because sometimes the juices are too much and you want to reduce it a little bit. But other than that, you've got a great dish. And the dish reheats beautifully. And what could be bad with all those onions? And the bulgur does make up for a soft meatball. You know, I always add soaked bread to my meatballs, but in this case, you don't need them because they're going to be delicious. Now, the other thing that's been on my mind this week, not pot pies. I have no pot pie report. I think I'm almost giving up on pot pie. I seem to have tasted almost all the frozen products out there, and the best one so far has been Boston Market. I still like the Kentucky Fried Chicken version, but that's not a frozen one either. Anyway, the other thing that's been on my mind, only because I think it's got a buzz on the internet, and that's how I have been seeing it anyway, is a pasta called pasta. It's actually almost always rigatoni, a la Norcina. Now, a Norcina is the wife of a Norcia, and a Norcia, colloquially, is a pork butcher because the town of Norcia is famous for its pork products. And I don't know how this happened, but pork butchers from Norcia spread around Italy, and as has this dish. I talked to an Italian friend this morning asking her, you know, was it a thing in Rome where she lives? And she said, no. I mean, we all know about it, but it's not a thing. But it seems to have become a thing here. And the thing here, interestingly, is different than the classic recipe. So the classic rigatoni, Norcia style, is you saute an onion in olive oil. You add broken up sausage. Here's the Norcia part, pork sausage. And then you add, and then you cream it by, well, you can put a little white wine in there just to sort of deglaze the pan, but then you add, in the real original recipe, you add ricotta, and you make and with some pasta cooking water, you make ricotta cream in the pan with the onion and sausage, and that's your and then you add grated cheese to that, and usually it would be in Norcia, which is in Umbria, could very well be pecorino or sheep's milk cheese, but Parmigiano works great. Anyway, what's interesting is that the original recipe, which did not call for cream or mushrooms, has evolved in the U.S. to include both cream and mushrooms because we can't leave well enough alone. In the hills of Umbria, they didn't have much cream, so they would not have used the half a cup to a cup and a half of cream I've seen in American recipes like this. The original would not have had cream. It would have been ricotta creamed into a sauce. So here's what, I have not done this yet, mind you, but I have the recipe in my mind, and after having read all these recipes with mushrooms in it, I've decided I am going to put mushrooms in it too. My Italian friend said it's okay. Usually they're terrible about being traditional, but in this case, I don't know why, she said, oh, just do what you want. So what I want is, I just recently bought a large, large quantity of dried porcini mushrooms that I'd like to use more. So I'm going to reconstitute some porcini, dried porcini. I'm going to saute my onion in olive oil, and then I'm going to add the sausage, and cook that until some of the fat renders out and the sausage gets a little brown. And then I'm going to add my reconstituted porcini. I don't know how much I'm going to use. No more than an ounce. The little packets that you buy in a market usually have less than an ounce. So a little packet's fine. And what I do is I use hottest possible tap water, cover them with tap water, and let them sit for 20 minutes. You're going to end up with a very flavorful soaking water, which if you're not using, and in this case I would not use it, I would pour it into an ice cube tray, and you'll have a cube of, or a couple of few cubes of porcini liquid that you can throw into a soup or stew or whatever, risotto. Anyway, so then I'm going to put in the porcini and saute them around a little bit, and I am going to use cream. And I'm going to start off with a half a cup of cream, but I bet you I'm going to end up using more. And that's it. You let it come to a simmer for 5 minutes, and that's it. Very easy recipe. I'm sure it's going to be super delicious. I've read a lot of recipes for this. And in one of them, written by Clifford Wright, who is a very important food writer, who within the last year or so wrote this monumental book on the regional cuisines of Italy. I mean, it's over 1,000 pages. His recipe, and he's a scholar, so I'm sure he researched this. His recipe calls for both sausage crumbled and a little bit of pancetta. So you could do that too. You probably could make this just with pancetta. No, you have to have sausage. You can leave out the pancetta, the extra fat and flavor. By the way, most of the pancetta that I buy these days does not have a whole lot of pancetta flavor. They're very mildly seasoned. I have to search for, and I may have to go to the Bronx for this, a flat kind of pancetta that's cured with hot pepper, or at least enough black pepper to make it flavorful. But what you buy in the supermarket, Citerio, for instance, sells perfectly okay, but not really sensational, diced pancetta in packets. It's a 4-ounce packet. And I, just for convenience sake, I sometimes use it. But anyway. So this is an interesting, I found this interesting that the original dish, which was couldn't have been simpler, just sausage and ricotta, really, maybe an onion, has evolved in America into this more elaborate, richer, even richer dish. Named after the butcher's wife. Anyway, what else am I cooking in this hot weather? What else am I not cooking in this weather?
Better question.
Yeah. Well, here's one that I make frequently. You can call it tzatziki, but basically it's cucumber soup. So it's either yogurt, and if you want to make it a really thick, dippy thing, use Greek yogurt. Or if you can find it in your supermarket, labne, which is the Middle Eastern version of Greek yogurt. I happen to like the brand that I buy here. And you mix that with grated cucumber. A lot of recipes will tell you to seed the cucumbers. I like the whole deal cucumber. And yes, it will make a soupier version than if you seeded the cucumbers, which also has a lot of juice in it. But I like it that way. A couple cloves of garlic, either smashed or, and chopped very fine, or grated. I lately grate garlic on my microplane, very good for this dish. And then a good handful, if not more, of chopped dill or chopped mint, or if you can't get either, chopped parsley, but a nice green herb. And that's it. Garlic, herb, cucumber, and dairy product. No cooking involved. If you want to thin it out a little bit, like you're using Greek yogurt, you can, in fact, thin it out with just a little bit of water. You don't need to use anything else. I remember years ago, I learned from Paula Walford, famous food writer, about straining yogurt and then reconstituting it with water. It gave a different viscosity and a different feeling altogether. And the other thing I've made twice now in the last week is peanut butter or sesame sauce for cold pasta. So yes, you have to cook the pasta, but then you rinse, in the rare case where you rinse it off with cold water, and you can let it sit for hours, it won't stick together. And then put on a sauce made with... Now, I happen to have, the first time I made this, a few tablespoons, well, it was more than that, maybe a quarter of a cup of tahini, left in the can from the tahini. And I decided to make the sauce with that, and I did it right in the can because I wanted to get up every last bit of tahini. And to that I added a couple of tablespoons of soy sauce, I would say a couple of teaspoons of sesame seed oil, a couple tablespoons of vinegar, although Bob says I added too much vinegar, but I didn't balance it out with any sweetener, which I often do, and that may be what he detected. But to that I would either add a spoon of honey or a spoon of maple syrup to sort of balance out the... And then I added hot pepper, too. Not a whole lot, because he doesn't eat hot, but I do. And that was it. Let that sit for a while. And if I had ginger, I would have used it. But I didn't have ginger, so I put in a spoonful of powdered ginger. When I told this recipe to my nephew, who wanted to make it that minute, he said, powdered ginger? You use powdered ginger? I said, yeah, it tastes like ginger. Not for every use, but in this case, I thought, well, we'll give it a little ginger punch, and it did. And that was it. Second time I made this, because I like it so much. Oh, by the way, you really want to add some vegetables to this. So if you sliver up some red pepper, a cucumber, scallions, all those things raw, go very nicely on cold noodles with sesame sauce, as do cold noodles with peanut butter sauce. So I do pretty much the same thing, but with peanut butter. And adding sesame oil, toasted Chinese sesame oil, to the peanut butter does give it a good sesame flavor. So it doesn't really taste so much like peanut butter anymore. But I have to say, my Thai restaurant in my neighborhood, sesame paste. They use peanut butter. So I feel it's legit. Those are some other cold things. I mean, the main cold thing is water. Got to drink a lot of water, guys. Okay.
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 Drink
have
a lot
cool
of water
week.
And
try to keep cool.
What?
Try to keep cool, as will I. And, you know, I always say this, but I when the temperature's like this, I really don't feel like eating at all. Last night, I didn't want to eat dinner. I just wanted some fruit. But Bob reminded me that we had fruit pizza in the freezer, so we ended up eating pizza. John, you know, one of my biggest listeners is John Belmont. And John wrote to me about how he was enjoying the tomatoes. And it made me think because I had the best tomato I've had in a long time, at least since last year, the other day, and it was from Canada. So I don't know what the government is doing about trade with Canada, but I hope they don't stop the tomatoes. Do you ever buy those tomatoes on a vine, as they call them?
Yes, but they recently had a nasty recall. So.
They did? Who?
The... purveyor. They are grown on the vine in different places, and then the little sticky thing gets put on them. And it was the grower is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I haven't heard anything about this, and I've been buying these regularly lately. They usually come from Canada or Mexico. I always think the Mexican ones are going to be better because, after all, Mexicans invented tomatoes as we know them. But in fact, the one that I had that was so sensational, and only under $2 a pound, too, by the way, was from Canada. And they are labeled, they're marked. And then there are some even grown in greenhouses, for sure, in Maine. And I've even had good, in the winter, good tomatoes from Maine. I can't say they're the best tomatoes, but they're a hell of a lot better than the mealy Florida ones we used to get. I haven't seen a Florida tomato in a long time. They're either Canada, Mexico, occasionally Maine, and local. And if I go to the farmer's market, I'm not going to find any locally grown field tomatoes now. not for another week or two, at least. Now they're still selling greenhouse tomatoes, so and they're charging double with the fancy supermarket charges for local tomatoes. So everybody have a cool week.
All right. Love to you. Love to Bob. As you say, stay cool. We will talk to you next time. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.